because we gotta take it down because we gotta pump it up. Can you give me the thing? Ready? Oh, you gonna do it? Well, then, a one and a two.
Now it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts. And now, here's...
Good morning, Sunday morning. Whether you are an art maker, art breaker, art faker, or just merely an art partaker, welcome all, because all are welcome, of course, to Homegrown, a show about local art. I'm the one they call Clinton, and I'm here with a woman who is always a chooser, never a loser, Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Yeah, hey, what's up?
How are you this morning, Leslie?
I've been up since 5. I've had absolutely no caffeine intake. Just don't mess with me too much today, okay?
Not to do dueling. Okay, not to do dueling Walking Dead this morning, because I'm going to let you know, our dear listeners, this is just a room of the Walking Dead right now. Not to do dueling Walking Dead this morning, but I was up till 5.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, but I had to get up at 5, like, you know, to like motor.
Yeah, to drive.
Wait.
So did I.
No.
I had to get up
to
at 5
drive,
this morning. I didn't end up getting up at 5 because I went to bed at 5.
Okay. And I had to get up at 5 and drive 2.5 hours in the rain behind really slow people who kept making me angry for 2.5 hours to get here to do this. Okay?
Don't. You had to turn it into a competition, did you?
It's not
you
a just competition.
No, it is.
It's
it
not
is.
A competition.
It's so a competition.
Well, then I
it's
win.
Either, it's yeah.
All right.
I love that. No, it's not a competition, but I win. It went from being a country western song to straight I'm better than you.
Aren't I always better than you, though? That's kind of the theme. That's
oh
what we.
Oh my gosh!
That's how we work, right?
Oh my goodness! I don't think that's a model for working. I really don't. I think that sounds like a model for dysfunction, right there.
It's worked so far for us, though. I mean, if it ain't broke.
We should look at this because I don't know about you, sister. I'm always broke. So, why don't we break into things? Ooh, hey, look at that segue. Why don't we break into things by doing our parental advisory? We start the show because we care. Because you're out there, but we're out there with you. You're there, we're there, we care. With a parental advisory, at one point in this show, we'll try not to. Oh my gosh, we will so try not to, but one point in the show, we may use the word stud. Oh my goodness. But if you've got young ones or even old ones, or maybe you're sitting there and you're just nursing the first part of your first cup of coffee this morning and you don't want to go wandering off to unpure places if we mention the word stud, then be warned. Be warned. Be advised. Be advised. Be your own parental. And that is our advisory. Hey, let's go to our first guest. Our first guest, we're so pleased to have with us. Again, she's returning to the show. She is a burlesque performer. She is a producer. She is the runner of things that needs to be run. And most immediately, she is the directress and grand high poobah extraordinaire of the Shenandoah Fringe Festival. Coming over the mountain, artistic talent flowing out of her like a fountain, Carmel Clavin.
That's me.
How are you, Carmel?
I'm awake. I have a show hangover from last night, but I'm doing pretty well, ladies and gentlemen.
He does this awesome, like, deep-throated introduction. It's me! She's so cute. Can I take her home? She's adorable.
Because that is an inveterate performer. That's
right?
What that is. That was timing. That was tone. That was sold.
She nailed it.
I've said two words. It's going very well.
So So the festival is about to go up. You came on the show first to tell us all about it and how people could get involved.
Yeah.
So how's it shaping up? Are you got? I mean,
what's... it's done. Is it's what done. It is. Yay. It's 2 weeks away. Remember, it's April 10th and 11th. That's a Sunday and a Monday. All day, both days, we have like 12 or 13 acts in total, including the Vaudeville Cabaret, which I will be emceeing, which includes another 10 or 12 acts within it. So we've got dozens of performers coming from as far north as Philadelphia and even New York City, actually, and as far south as Asheville, North Carolina,
wow,
and Knoxville, Tennessee, and Washington, D.C. So we have a wonderful curation of performers in film, in performance, in visual arts. We've got a great gallery that will be going up. And we also have our hostage of honor, James Taylor of Baltimore. He will be bringing his vasty vaudeville knowledge to share with us. His cabinets of curiosities and his books. And he'll be doing a lecture on Sunday and another one on Monday about whatever the crap he wants to talk about. But he is such a wonderful font of knowledge, and you can ask him a question and get the most interesting 3-hour answer you've ever heard.
Oh,
so I'm really looking forward to that. And he will also be presenting our awards on Sunday night and Monday night.
Oh, awesome. So you mentioned there's a huge range of performances. So how many films? Are there dance pieces? Are there like what can we see?
Leslie, let me tell you all about it.
Okay.
So we have two double features. And by the way, everyone, you can look up all of this on shenfringe.com.
That's shenfringe.com!
S-H-E-N, like Shenandoah, fringe, like the fringe that you wear, .com.
Shenfringe.com!
Hashtag Shenfringe. So we have two double features for our movie category. And we've got Repeater out of Harrisonburg, Virginia, and which will be teamed up with Father Unknown, which is actually the Virginia premiere of Father Unknown, which is a documentary style tale of a man learning about his father and his father learning about his true identity.
Wow.
So it's very interesting. By Katie Eaton, a local filmmaker. And then the other double feature is a 5-minute little short piece called Uni, about a unicycle loving boy who's living in a cruel 2-wheel world. And it's an adorable little silent film that was made by some people out of Stanton. And then we also have The David Dance, which is by a filmmaker out of New York City, which deals with a radio show host, actually, who is an openly gay man who gets a lot of crap thrown at him from conservative radio people. And so it's about how he deals with that and his relationship with his sister, and how they move through life. So we're super excited about that as well.
Wow.
But those are the films, but we've got a gallery full of art by chainsaw artists and weird found object curations about murders and baseball, which apparently go together. And
murders and baseball. Okay. Sure.
No, you've got to come. You've got to come and
I will
out.
Just roll with that.
We have a photography exhibit called Truck Month by Pat Jarrett, and he's going to be making a zine for that. And I think today, since it's Zombie Jesus Day, is a good time to mention the bumper sticker that he's created.
I'm sorry. It's what?
It's Zombie Jesus Day. It's Easter. Part of Truck Month is a bumper sticker that says "Keep Christ in Truck Month." So yes, and t-shirts that say "My God is an awesome snake God." So we're really excited about that. But the performances range from experimental theater to commedia dell'arte to, like I said, burlesque and vaudeville. And just minor clarification, I am not a burlesque performer. Uh-oh. I am a vaudeville performer and an MC.
Clinton.
So in this day and age, there is a delineation, but there didn't used to be. Burlesque meant you could make a burlesque of anything. You can make fun of anything, just like drag. Right now has this connotation of being like it's men dressing like women. It's like, no, drag is whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
So you could say, yes, I'm a burlesque performer, but I have not yet taken my clothes off on stage. Not yet.
She said not yet.
Not yet.
Clinton, there's still hope for you.
I apologize. I was using the theatrically historically correct term as opposed to the modern term.
Obviously.
I spent too much time geeking out about these things. There
you go. He's all about the books, he is.
So the vaudeville cabaret will include people out of Richmond, people out of Stanton, Virginia, people from D.C., weirdo show. So there's going to be a straitjacket, striptease, which I'm super excited about.
Really?
Oh, God,
I want to see that.
And juggling with knives and musical interludes and belly dancing and sword dancing. And that's just a cabaret show, which I'm pleased to be the MC for. But we also have a shadow puppet play based on political intrigues in Argentina under Juan Perón's regime, which looks amazing.
And, wow!
And we have a devised theater piece about called The Labyrinth, which is about how do you make a monster and how do you make a man and is there a difference? And it's like a 30-minute brief piece. We have a group out of D.C. called Dr. Dewar and Peach. Dr. Dewar is an ethno-crypto-zoo-musicologist. And Peach is his assistant. And so they sing original songs that they have written about monsters.
Oh.
Like the Stomp Kick Waltz, which is about Godzilla destroying a city.
Okay.
So, I mean, it just goes on and on. There's devised Shakespeare. There's, like I said, there's Commedia dell'arte. That's a one-man Commedia dell'arte show out of Philadelphia. It's 80 minutes. He does all of the characters, and he has one guy playing music for him while it's happening. It's madness. Utter madness.
Wow.
And if you want a bit more of a, like, what actually is she talking about as she rambles on, you can go to our Facebook page. That's the Shenandoah Fringe Festival. Hashtag Shen Fringe. And you can see every Friday for the last month or so, I've been doing something called Fringe Friday. So you can meet or see some sort of video or photo or a peek at what you have to look forward to at the Fringe Festival.
That is so cool.
It is cool.
That, I mean, I did Fringe in DC 2 summers ago, and it was nothing like what you are explaining.
I don't know about that.
And it sounds so awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And the coolest thing is that, I mean, it is 2 days. It's 2 full days of stuff. So buy your tickets now. They're already on sale. ShenFringe.com. But
yeah, that's the thing. So it's a Sunday
and a Monday. Yeah.
So if I don't have a Sunday and a Monday, like the 2 full days free, I'm out of luck, right?
Well, it starts at 11 o'clock in the morning and it goes until midnight. So, I mean, if you haven't got an hour in there, I feel bad for you, my friend. But it's the idea of the community that it's building, but also the opportunity it's giving people who are kind of out on the fringes to present experimental work or present work that they have no other place for, because really the purpose of a cabaret show is, like,
yeah,
a lot of stuff can't live on its own because it's 5 minutes of choreography or it's a weird little song about space aliens and Margaret Thatcher. Like, where is it going to go?
Right.
So so it can go in a cabaret show. So that's what I'm really excited about, is this coming together of people. And maybe that's selfish, but I'm really looking forward to meeting everybody.
Yeah.
But how it works is you get a Fringe button. You buy your button for $5, and that gets you into all of the free events. And there are quite a few of them. So there's a free boutique performance about the angel Gabriel getting kicked out of heaven and him being kind of a drunk now. And they serve you tea and cookies at that show. Like, that's going to be awesome. And all of the parties are open to people who have buttons. The gallery is for people that have buttons. All of the lectures from James Taylor for people who have buttons. And if you're a VIP and you've got a button, you get little special discounts around town.
Ooh.
So I know, right? It's a very important patron,
yes,
is what that stands for. Or very idealistic person, pig, Penelope. I don't know. But I mean, I'm just going to come up with different uses for that. But it's going to be, I think, just madness in the best way. And we're still looking for volunteers, ladies and gentlemen. Volunteers get paid with one single ticket for a show that they don't have to work at. So please check that out. Again, the form is on the Facebook page. It's also on the website. But we are looking for gophers and drivers and hosts and ticket terrors and people who are willing to stand next to our living mermaid so she doesn't get touched by strange people. And
oh, well, yes. Let's have someone do that.
Yes. Oh, did I mention we also have buskers that were literally filling the streets of Stanton with music and fire eaters? Yeah, that's happening too.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so two full days, and I can't think of anything better I would do with my Monday. Not everybody fulfills that identity of Monday through Friday, you know? Like, until very recently, I only had a Sunday and a Monday as a weekend. And the Downton Abbey reference, but yes. What is a weekend is like, I don't know, what is that? But remember, this is a profit sharing festival, which means that a large percentage of the ticket actually goes to the artist that you're watching. This is not just a like, hey, come here and do stuff for me to fulfill my content, but to see and experiment with this idea that the arts economy is actually a huge, viable, important, vibrant, necessary piece of the larger economy, and that we should be accepting that as our daily bread. Hello, Easter. Instead of a luxury item, because art is not a luxury item. It is something that you need to survive, just like toilet paper, just like bread. So
that is so awesome.
Oh, thanks. I hope to see you guys there. And the cabaret show is not the best part, but it's my part.
But it's the best part. She's fudging that a little bit.
If you want to see a straight burlesque show, the Judy Chops will actually be playing like a 40 minute show where they actually play their original music, and it is to tell the story of a burlesque dancer and a man from the audience that falls in love with her.
Of course, because when there's a burlesque dancer, there's a guy in love with her. That's how it happens.
There's always that guy in the audience.
Right? There's always that kind of creepy, but not so much.
Hello, this is Craig Jennings. You are listening to Homegrown on 94.7.
17 minutes past the hour. You're here with Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC. If you're just tuning in, then you are listening to Carmel Clavin, the directrix and grand high poobah extraordinaire of the Shenandoah Fringe Festival, shenfringe.com!
#shenfringe.
Talking about the glorious extravaganza that is to come April 10th and 11th over in Stanton. Stay tuned, because of course after our wonderful show, you'll have another wonderful show with the ever classic, ever fabulous Charlottesville Institution, the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Your host, Sean McCord, this morning will talk to Virginia atheists and agnostics about what it means to lead a full life without religion, without having to die and then rise 3 days later. What possibly could that be like? Anyway, Carmel, so yeah. Beautiful ball of glory that you're talking about.
Oh my God.
Being run in a vaudeville style. That is to say that there are going to be multiple instances of performances during the day that people can hit.
Clinton, my dear, we actually have 4 main stages and 2 tertiary stages. So we have our Shen Fringe Gallery, which is where lectures will be happening and where the gallery and the box office is. We also, and the parties in the evening, the shindigs. We also have the cranberries.
There are parties?
There are parties, which you get into with a button.
Wait, you didn't just coin the term shindigs, did you?
Yes, she did.
Absolutely.
Because she's the grand high poobah.
I started using the word shindig and people started asking me what it meant. I was like, what do you mean? What does it mean?
How do you not know what that means?
It's a mighty fine shindig. So the cranberry stage will be the smaller stage, and that's where a lot of the experimental stuff or the Argentinian shadow puppet show is going to happen, which is amazing. So that's one venue. And then the Artisan's Loft, which is above the Stan Antique Center, which is on Beverly Street, 2-minute walk. easy peasy, not even up a hill, is for our larger shows. And then up the road a little bit from that is the Emmanuel Episcopal stage, which is at Emmanuel Episcopal Church across from Stuart Hall in Frederick, which is where our films will be screened. And then we have a couple of other outlier performances that will happen at the in the Masonic Building right next door, or up the street at the Old Stonewall School for our boutique show about Gabriel, as I mentioned. But those four stages are the main ones, and they will have shows pretty continuously in each one of them. So there's never really more than one thing that you could be seeing at a time. If like, if you've chosen to see Heretic Pride's Labyrinth, you on Sunday, that means you might miss Umbelico Mask Ensemble's Commedia dell'arte show, but you could catch it tomorrow, because all of the times are shifted. So it's the same group of performers, but it's actually a different schedule from day to day.
Right.
So if you do come both days, and you should, then you have the opportunity to see everything. So unlike a larger festival, which this is plenty large as it is, unlike a larger festival, you are not spoiled for choice,
right,
as far as like, oh, I'm so overwhelmed, I can't see everything.
Yeah.
But on a single day, you could easily see six shows without overlapping, and then also
wow,
go to the Shindig.
That's so great.
I think so.
So you mentioned the size of it, and being the grand high poobah.
Oh, darling. We haven't even said the word stud.
I know. We're both size queens. I can tell. I see that in you. It's okay. You're in a safe space.
On the radio.
You mentioned the amount of performers, and I know that must take an enormous amount of work.
What?
So my question is, of course you're going to do this next year.
Obviously.
So is it going to be bigger next year?
I really don't know yet. My gut reaction right now is no, it will absolutely not be bigger. It might be smaller. It might be one day. It really depends on turnout. If we don't get
right,
people coming out for that experimental Monday, then
yeah,
we'll listen to that feedback and say, all right, we're only going to do it on a Sunday, or maybe we'll move it. But I mean, it's taken an enormous amount of work. But by next year, I won't have to build a website, and I won't have to build a brand.
Right.
And I won't have to do a lot of groundwork, because right now it's all about getting the word out, which is why I'm so happy that I'm here with you.
We love that you're here.
But it is looking to be killer. And that's not just because I haven't slept since August.
Right.
But I do have a couple of people helping me who are being lovely and wonderful, and the community at large has turned out in force to say like, oh, I'll give you a venue, like you don't have to pay us rent, or I'll give you this amount of money as a sponsor and just put me in your program, yes, I'll bring that thing for you. And you know, for instance, let me say Crutchfield has been lovely. They are loaning us lots and lots of electronics, and that is so wonderful of them to be such a supporter of the festival.
Yeah,
so we thank them. We're gonna be actually, I'm writing a song for them, I'm writing a jingle for them.
Aww.
Because if at a certain level, a certain sponsorship level, you actually earn yourself a jingle at the cabaret show, because what is a cabaret show without commercials?
Exactly.
So I'm super excited about that. But like, that's just one example of the many generous people in the valley and over here in Charlottesville who have said like, yes, well, absolutely, we think this is wonderful, we want to be a part of it, we're so excited, all of our employees want to come. And I'm like, all right, great, let's do that.
That's really awesome. So how did you, other than people just hearing about it and contacting you, how did you go about getting those kinds of sponsors? Because that's something that we talk to artists about on the show all the time, that a lot of artists don't know how to do that.
Oh my God, it's so hard. It is,
right?
You know, because it starts to make you question what you're doing and the worth of what you're doing, because
right,
you have to sell it. You have to say like, would you like to give me $500 because
right,
of reasons?
Amen to that.
So what I did was to know, and also we started selling sponsorships. We started pushing sponsorships before we knew who our exact performers were.
So it's hard to sell something.
So we couldn't say like, yeah. Well, wouldn't you love to support Umbilical Mask Ensemble? They do this one man show. I had to say like, wouldn't you like to be a part of the Shenandoah Fringe Festival and be...
When you couldn't really tell them what it would be.
Right, other than just like, this will be a home for the wild, wondrous, and weird of the valley. It will be a place for people to come and let the freak flag fly, as you say.
Right.
But also to see wonderful art. And it's not just like, oh, it's edgy, so it's in the festival. No, no, no. It's not about that. So what I did was I worked very closely with my graphic designer. And I actually said, like, what are we capable of actually giving in exchange for a sponsorship? And the other thing is that you have to know the difference between in-kind and cash.
Yes.
So... what is it worth to me for an in-kind sponsorship as opposed to a cash donation?
Mm-hmm.
This year, in-kind is king because it's things like venues or advertising space in another program for another show or coming on a radio show or,
yeah,
by the
or
way,
equipment,
I have not been endorsed by this radio show, by the way. See, I said it, and they must believe me. So you have to consider things like that. But what I did with her was like, can we, like, how many half pages ads can we give away? How many sixth of a page? Or like, and then it was like, well, how big is the program? Oh, crap. All right. Well, if we do this kind of paper and we fold it in half this way. So you really have to think about that. And then I had to think, like, what is it worth? What is $100 worth? What is $25,000 worth?
Right.
So to consider all of those things. And then I started... stalking people and
I love that you call it stalking.
It's what it is. You Google businesses, you Google people, and you start asking your friends and you and the staff and the people. You go, hey, do you know anybody? And I have not had a single conversation in the last 9 months that did not include, hey, did you hear that I'm doing the Shenandoah Fringe Festival?
Yes.
Which I apologize for, everyone. I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. That's how you do it.
But to really say, like, are you interested in being a sponsor? We are looking for sponsors. And sometimes people say, oh, you're doing a Fringe Festival? We give out sponsorships at my business. Are you accepting sponsorships?
Why, yes, we are.
So you just have to be prepared is the big thing, but knowing what you need. And also, if you don't hit your goal and if you don't hit what you need, you have to have a contingency plan. You can't just say, like, well, everything's broken. Nothing happens. Art is ruined forever. Like right now, for example, are you listening? If we don't get the right amount of volunteers, we have to restructure our volunteer situation. So
right.
You have to say, okay, well, we can't have four people at every venue. So what is the minimum and what do we need to switch around? And you have to be prepared for that.
Yeah.
And if you're not, then it is a hot mess and nobody wants to go to a hot mess. Nobody wants to pay a ticket to see a hot mess. So
well, some people might, but we're not talking about
that kind of hot mess.
Right.
It's not a happening. It's not like someone's getting spaghetti poured over their head and like we're all going like, this is amazing. Look, it's happening. So, So it is, the sponsorship question is big, and it also all the time brings up that question of worth and value. Like what, like at the end of this, I know that I'm coming out of this with no money in my pocket.
Right.
So, hopefully that will change in the future, but I know that it's worth the work and it's worth the time. And my staff has been awesome and they know it's worth the work and worth the time. So, in the future, as we push this experiment, we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, you should go buy tickets, VIP or general admission.
And where can they buy those?
You can get those at www.shenfringe.com. Hashtag ShenFringe. but it's going to be lovely. And like I said, seating is pretty limited in a lot of these venues. So you want to get your tickets now. And VIPs actually get priority seating as well as welcome packages that include local art, original local art by people, a drink at the Shindig, love and affection from me and from our hosts, and secret discounts around town. But I'm really looking forward to it. I've got all of my gowns picked out. I'm sure that Clinton has all of his gowns picked out as well, right? I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. He's got a big pink one with, you know, bling and all. I've seen it. It's wonderful.
Oh, I'll wear mine. I'll wear my fuchsia gown.
Getting rid of the pink. The pink doesn't really work on me. The pink is just...
Really? With your... Oh, your winter coloring is set in,
it's,
so that's
I'm
what
saying.
It is?
I'm
okay.
Saying, yeah. You know?
So you're going to go with the blue, is what you're saying?
I have a blue gown.
We can go twinsies. Oh, I'm so excited about this.
Thank you so much, Carmel, for coming to talk to us about Shin Fringe. I hope it goes amazingly well, and I'll drag Clinton to something.
Drag him, yeah. Please. He will be driving the car that you go in. I expect to see both of you there, and I am so, so happy to be here. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful Zombie Jesus Day.
Thank you.
30 minutes past the hour. And you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The show is Homegrown, a show about local art. Speaking of local art, let's speak about some local art that you can see in our local town or in our local area. Currently running right now over going until April 3rd, To Kill a Mockingbird at Live Arts. Yes, it's that To Kill a Mockingbird. Harper Lee's classic tale turned into a classic play. Go check it out. You've only got till April 3rd to see it. Also currently running over the mountain at the American Shakespeare Center. The Actors Renaissance season is coming to a close. Hurry up. You've only got some last opportunities to see Shakespeare's The Tempest and Measure for Measure. Also Middleton's Women Beware Women, Fletcher and Massinger's The Sea Voyage, and William Congreve's Love for Love. Right now showing at the UVA Fralin Art Museum until April 10th, Navajo Weaving, Geometry of the Warp and Weft. Starting at March 31st and going till April 9th, and playing also at UVA in the drama department, it's the play The Arctic Circle and A Recipe for Swedish Pancakes, play written by UVA alumna Samantha Mocker. Also starting March 31st and going to April 2nd, Talking About the Tempest. Talking About the Tempest, it's Dueling Tempests. Dueling Tempi. Dueling Tempi? I'll go with that. Dueling Tempi. The Tempest playing at PVCC going from March 31st to April 2nd. Music by Alethea Leventhal and Mecca Burns. Choreography by belly dancer Jennifer LaFleur. It's a movement-based Middle Eastern music-inspired Tempest. You don't want to miss this one. It's going to be interesting. Also starting March 31st and going till April 10th, Polaroid Stories at Guerrilla Theater. Greek myth meets modernity on the fringes of urban society. Guerrilla Theater, the plucky little theater down on Allied Street. Check out their latest offering starting March 31st. April 4th to 7th, auditions for Antony and Cleopatra, speaking of Guerrilla Theater, at Guerrilla Theater. Auditions are at 7 p.m. They're looking for actors from 13 and up, and also actors of color are needed, but I predict they will not come. They are needed, but they will not come.
Hush you! Hush!
April 31st, Snow White by the Charlottesville Ballet at the V. Earl Dickerson Building at PVCC. Bring your kids, bring your family. They won't say stud during this performance. You don't have to worry. And let's just look at some of the music that you can check out in our local area tonight. King Golden Banshee doing a Celtic jam at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Tomorrow, the UVA Chamber Music Series features violinist Daniel Sender at Old Cabell Hall. Also tomorrow, it's the Match Sellers with the Ragged Mountain String Band at the Garage, Charlottesville's smallest and funkiest little venue at 250 North 1st Street downtown. You can sit there, you can listen to the music and turn around and look at the Lee statue and wonder about the intersection between the two. March 29th, Red and the Romantics at Dirty Nellie's. March 30th, Pale Blue Dot with Illusionistics at Rapture. April 1st, it's the Sally Rose Band at Glass House Winery. Also April 1st, Nefarious Characters play at Wild Wolf Brewery. And Jim Wave holds it down at Albemarle Cider Works on April 2nd. Also on April 2nd, the Virginia Women's Chorus has their spring concert, Storm Coming. I'm not going to spoil it all for you, but Somewhere Over the Rainbow on the docket. Got to see that. Also on April 2nd, Karen Jones, Virginia's honky-tonk sweetheart coming in from Fredericksburg, is going to be playing at the Pro Renata Farm Brewery. And coming up on April 15th, Coast to Coast Live, a hip-hop artist showcased at Club Infusion in Richmond, featuring local hip-hop artist Fly Deezy. April 17th, Amuse-Bouche by the Victory Hall Opera Company. And, of course, every Monday, it's the Singer-Songwriter Night at The Local. Every Wednesday, Bob Bonetta lays the jazz down at Cafe Katura. Every Wednesday, of course, it's the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's and Jim Wave at Blue Moon Diner. Every Thursday, the Woolen Writers Revival, hosted by Will Thomas Reed and Brian Craddock, gives you some writers over at some songwriters over at Firefly. And also every Thursday, at Miller's. It's the John Dearth Quintet, because every once in a while, you just got to come down to Dearth. And those are just some of the artistic things that you can see in our artistic town. If you are an artist and have an event and you want us to alert people about it, we'd love to do it. Let us know. www.facebook.com/homegrownwpvc, or just email the information to us at homegrown947@gmail.com. 35 minutes past the hour. Let's head to our next guest.
Okay, before we go on to the next guest, I think I should address the elephant soon to be in the room once his voice comes on and we hear that is considerably deeper than Leslie's voice. We have here our emergency co-host today, Chris Bomer, replacing Leslie. How are you doing, Chris?
Good, Clinton. How are you? My voice is only deeper sometimes.
This is true. When Leslie goes into that element of command, who knows what depths she can sink to. Okay, so for our next guest, we are pleased to have a local artist. She is a performer, a writer, a director, a producer. She does so freaking much. Jen Hoyt-Tidwell, hello.
Hello.
How are you, my dear?
You said frickin'.
I did say frickin'.
Just warned me.
It's important to me to exemplify the things that don't do as I say.
Okay.
Do as I warn.
Fudge.
We want to make sure that the FCC has something to occupy their time with. It's a rough job, but someone's got to justify the bureaucracy in some way. Speaking of justifying bureaucracy, that's the lamest segue ever. There's no word. I had nothing. I had nothing coming from that.
Something connecting to my career? Speaking of bureaucracy, I've heard the way you run your projects is involving a lot of spreadsheets, which is not far from the truth.
It's really, because I've seen you. I stopped by your project the other day, and you were...
You did not stop by.
You were
You drove by and barely stopped the car.
I was going to stop, but you were so intense on what you were doing in terms of... You seemed like you were into the preparation. I was kind of scared to get out of the car. It's like, oh, she's into it.
She's catatonic. I don't know.
I should not bother this artist right now. So your current project is called No Wake. It's performing currently at the Ix Complex. Is it actually at the Ix Art Park, or is it just at the Ix Complex?
It is technically managed by the Art Park, but it is not down on the ground level. It's up on it is on the ground. It's on the upper platform, which is sort of just a blank concrete slab right now with the sort of lightweight giant studs that are echoing what used to be there, which was a beautiful textile factory and where I have done a couple other big projects 8 years ago.
You know, I tried to start a performance piece with a bunch of lightweight giant studs, but...
You know what? How did I set you up for that?
What I want to know is how you set me up for that and then just let it ride so long.
I didn't even hear it. It's like I do this in my sleep.
It was just...
Fudge.
Right, so No Wake, at least I've been describing No Wake on the air when we've been announcing our artistic events that people can come and see as I've got it written down here, a multimedia performance piece with a dance installation. Is that correct?
Yes, it's...
Could you unpack that for us?
Sure, I know. It's hard to describe simply because we don't have a lot of dance theater dance going on in Charlottesville. I feel like it would be...
Much to our... chagrin, much to our disadvantage.
I think we just plain old don't have a lot of original theater here. We have the lucky resource of live arts, and I've been a part of live arts for many, many years, but I also enjoy doing projects that sort of don't fit in a conventional theater box and are site-specific and as accessible as possible, which is why I've chosen to do this outdoors, which is rather insane. But it is based on a play I wrote. No Wake is the name of a play I wrote 3 years ago, and When I was granted this public artist residency at the Bridge, I decided to take this play, this core story, which is very mythic.
Yeah, hold on. Talk about that for a moment, because you're the 2016.
That's right.
You're the 2016 Bridge public artist.
Yes.
And so what is the public artist residency at the Bridge PAI?
Okay, so the Bridge, this is the inaugural annual project. They have piloted it for half years, but I have been allowed to create any large-scale project I want as long as it connects to some community. And in this case, I started out with this performance being out in public, but I didn't know then that it would eventually trickle down to a huge portion of the middle school and older child community, and also a lot of adults at Friendship Court, and just it's just sprawled out. But starting with the themes that are within the play.
Right, right.
So when I was given the residency, initially I thought, oh, I should do something completely new. But then it occurred to me how important it was for me to produce this work that I've been working on so much, and that it would lend itself really well because of the sort of grand epic scale of it, based on the Greek epic, the Odyssey, sort of. It's inspired by that. To put it outside, just like the Greeks did, and to see what was possible without dialogue.
Oh.
So the play does not, the actors do not speak, but there is voiceover, there's original music composition throughout, there's a score that Ted Coffey, who's a music professor, and he's also Bill T. Jones' musical collaborator. For those who don't know who Bill T. Jones is, he's a well-known experimental choreographer worldwide, and somebody I really admire. I come from a theater tradition, but I'm very, very drawn to dance theater in the vein of Pina Bausch, for anybody who knows her. Things that are that involve daily motion and movement, but are movement-based in storytelling and more, mm-hmm. I would say, speak to our dream state, our subconscious, or not more, but then that's an important layer, that it's not about intellectual ideas entirely or contemporary, exactly political issues in a very didactic or even direct way, but it's all there. I mean, I'm trying to kind of approach these things through the universal, and hopefully I'm doing that. I mean, it's
so is this a narrative? Is there a narrative for this piece?
Absolutely. It is very grounded in a story.
Isn't that a divergence for you? Because I feel like a lot of the work that you've done over the years has been non-narrative.
Yeah, it's been more fractured narrative and in this case, it's not like we don't get into the surreal. We do. But part of having inner titles, which we have, let me back up and say I'm working with a ton of really, really amazing visual and musicians, different artists who don't typically work in theater, filmmakers, and we've created these moving intertitles and worked with a child and a friend of a friend's child to do the voiceovers, and they help ground it in the narrative. But the actor's performance is, I would say, it's more evocative in a dream state way, but it's not mm-hmm. it's not like dance. I mean there is a clear story happening, and that's what's sort of hard to describe for people who don't typically go to see this performance. But I find it deeply, I'm completely biased, but deeply affecting because of the combination. It speaks to, you know, we're a very visual TV oriented society now, and so what's happening on the screen is, of course, completely draws you in this very primal way, and the combination of them takes you into a world.
Moving from a scripted work, which is where you started,
right,
whatever your original inspiration was, to what you've got now, which involves these other elements and is not, although there are spoken elements, the performers themselves on stage are not speaking words and saying lines. How did the work change, and also how did you work with your collaborators? In other words, how did you develop the physical and visual vocabulary to tell this story?
Well, I started initially thinking of it as a silent film, and I think it has a lot of elements in common with that.
Yeah, so I immediately thought that when you said intertitles.
Yeah, I mean, And I'm highly influenced, I would say, by some classic filmmakers like Bergman. And in this case, because I'm a fan of his, what do you call it, the God trilogy or whatever, and Persona, this notion of slipping identity and compassion and how those things can work, seeing yourself connected to someone finally in a way that dissolves boundaries. I'm getting really esoteric here.
Interesting. And is your pathway to that through the examination of grief in the piece?
Yeah, but I do want to, before I get into the theme of the piece, or themes of the piece, because there are many, address your question of working with these collaborators, because I did see it, because I have a hard time, even though I'm in a playwriting MFA program, I have a hard time with words. I mean, I'm good, I'd say I'm a decent writer, but dialogue, kind of like a play that's all dialogue, confounds me, because I feel like I tend to see things visually in my mind first. Every piece I've ever done has occurred to me as an image before anything. And sometimes musically combined with that. So it almost made more sense to do this play this way. And so some of the poetry that it's at the beginning, we've got this sort of almost traditional Greek theater chorus. They're these nosy neighbors, and they're speaking all these lines that are very poetic, that actually work better, all toppled on top of each other, recorded and in combination with this movement. I don't know how to describe it other than it achieves my goal for this piece much more than the play with the dialogue. Even though I'm proud of that, I just feel like this is the best expression of it.
Now, you're performing in the piece yourself, or you?
Oh, no.
The performers are all not you.
It's your vision, but... Yeah.
So how did you, in working with them, did you simply tell them the story? Did you direct them? Did you give them suggestions that then inspired them to come up with gestures, or...
It was an amazing process. I come from a theater company called Performers Exchange Project, and the way that we work is, and this was the first time we'd worked with outside actors, which was also a great stretch for us. And
you say we. Is this a Performers Exchange Project piece? Because I thought this was a solo work.
It is not. I hired my colleagues from PEP, Sean Richards. She worked with the actors in training them, and Martha Mendenhall, who helped me think through adapting the script of dialogue to a silent script. So it's very PEP influenced, I would say. The way of working is entirely related to how we've made things with PEP. But because the story is deeply ingrained in me and I've been thinking about it for a long time, it wasn't like when we create things in PEP, it's collectively generated, and you know, there's no single author, for example. And I don't see that I am the single author here. I let them read the silent script and the original. And then we went into rehearsal after Sean had sort of given them the way that we warm up physically, the way that we create these pieces of choreography, and then mix them up, recycle them, treat them differently. They were experienced in that, and then we give them assignments. So we say, okay, you have to come up with a cartoon character, and we marry the cartoon character with the animal that they're playing in the forest. So then we don't necessarily have to know that that's Goofy playing a deer, but it helps the actor narrow their palette physically, so they know how to create a walk. It's not emotionally generated, which isn't to say that emotion doesn't then come in. I mean, every actor has their internal process and their story, but I don't want to know what it is. That's your personal deal. And so the actors really influenced this a lot.
That is very much, from what I understand of the PEP aesthetic, that seems very much in line with it. Or at least that's the type of thing that I've heard Sean talk about before, when she talks about the relationship of the actor to the movement.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what differentiates it from, I guess, what we call straight theater, where the director, you know, the script is sort of the king, and most people are in service to that, ultimately. Right. And in this case, the actor's work influenced the way the story evolved, or things that I decided to let go of from my vision of it, and things that just occurred to us in the process. I mean, like, I there were things that I was like, that doesn't make any sense in my story. How are we going to work that out? And then sometimes that just kind of, you know, just go, okay, actors, you solve this problem.
You know? The magic of theater.
Yeah, yeah.
So since we're recording this, beforehand, don't quite know when this is going to broadcast during our show, but if you have a clock near you, turn right now, look at the clock. All right, it's that many minutes before the hour you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And if you're just tuning in to us, welcome. This is Homegrown, a show about local art, and we are lucky enough to be speaking to Jennifer Hoyt Tidwell, the producer and writer, and is it fair to say director?
Yeah, I was the director of this piece.
The director of No Wake, which is currently performing at the Ix Art Park. Jennifer Hoyt Tidwell, who is the 2016, the first, she's the inaugural progressive, the Bridge Progressive Artist Initiative public artist.
That's correct.
Wow.
You got it.
Tell me, if you would, or tell us, I'm sorry, tell us, if you would, about the Water Bearers.
Thank you. So that is the dance installation, and it is not the play, but it happens before the play. It's sort of a connected element. So it's a group of fluctuating between 25 and 30 girls who are middle-aged girls.
25 and 30. This is like
40
is
to 55. Yeah. No, it is.
Do you ever do anything small? I mean, well, I guess
I did. While You Wait was actually very, very, very small. It was just me. But I wanted to. I was ready to take on something that stretched me beyond, and this did. I mean, this is. But the Water Bearers are being choreographed by my friend and choreographer Dinah Gray, she teaches this age. She is also a dancer and ballet dancer and other styles. But she agreed to take on choreographing 30 girls. And the deal was we were going to pay them. We decided we would pay them a stipend of $100. They could not miss more than 3 rehearsals. And we just put out a call. Like, anybody who's willing to do this, you don't have to have dance experience. You don't have to pay anything. You just have to show up. And so we really wanted to make sure we hope to have a diverse group of kids from all girls, actually, from all the public schools, all the private schools, and in the neighborhood where we were going to be dancing. So we ended up rehearsing because Ix is downtown in the quote unquote strategic investment area.
It's
a whole other subject.
I feel like I should be embarrassed to say this. This is a completely new euphemism for me.
Oh, really?
The strategic investment area?
Well, let me get to that in a second, because we have part of our funding comes through the NEA's Play the City program. Anyway, and so it's called the strategic investment area because pretty soon it's going to all be turned over to a number of entities. But anyway, we ended up rehearsing at Friendship Court in their community center and kind of partnering with the man who runs the programs there, Dom Morris, who's fantastic. And he helped us put the word out to the kids there. And it's been a great experience. I mean, a lot of these kids did not know each other, so it was awkward. It remains slightly awkward.
But so you've got 25 to 30 middle school, is that what you said?
Yeah, 9 girls? To 15-year-olds.
And there's water involved? What?
So why is it called the Water Bearers? Yeah, right. Because the story, which I haven't really gotten into, has an 11-year-old protagonist who sends a lot of messages out in bottles, and it's got sort of a post-apocalyptic feel.
A post-apocalyptic feel to a tale based on classical Greek epics.
Yeah, backwards and forward.
That has a strong element of the surreal, is preceded by a dance installation, but still is deeply rooted in a narrative that examines themes of connection, compassion,
grief. And the environment.
And the environment.
Yeah, so the Water Bearers, all of these projects are connecting environmental denial and responsibility and interpersonal denial and responsibility. There is a device, a magical device in the play. There's a sea made of water bottles. There's a connection between alcohol bottles and water bottles and addiction and dissociation. And so because of the impending potential water crisis, I had this image of girls bailing out, but instead of water, they have these buckets with lights in them. And so they're doing this beautiful choreography at sunset and later where they're all walking silently and they're wearing leaf bags. So this amazing sound is going. And to see that many girls or that many kids, you can't actually tell that they're girls, walking in a line without saying anything. And then doing this simple but beautiful you know, sometimes unison, but sometimes their own little phrase that they created. It's just, I don't know. It just is amazing to me. It's very evocative on a level that is not intellectual.
The title, No Wake, is very, to me, evocative.
Yes.
Without knowing a thing about the show, do you want to talk at all about that?
Yeah.
And or... therefore, the story, the inspiration, et cetera?
Absolutely. So the name came from, I grew up on the river in Lancaster County, Virginia, by the bay. And we had a no wake sign. We lived near the mouth of the Rappahannock, which spills into the Chesapeake Bay. And so you have the no wake sign there. And what I like about that is it's a request. Please protect our shore. Please protect our house. But you can't guarantee that's going to happen or be respected. And these signs are always like handwritten or painted and they, you know, well, now they make them, but they're just, there's something that's always spoken to me about those signs. And, then I lived on an island on the West Coast, outside of Seattle just for a year, a few years ago. And I connected, I didn't even realize it at the time, but there are these houses on the island that were literally just, because they had no regulations at the time, perched over the water, just kind of sitting on the rocks. And they seemed so vulnerable to me. And of course, they could not handle it. You know, we were hoping that there was no earthquake event or anything like that, which is tsunami. There's a possibility of tsunamis there. So they're so fragile. And so that's where I sort of got the idea of... No Wake reminded me of also what if a widow decided what had happened to her husband was so upsetting that she could not have any closure. She couldn't conduct a funeral. She couldn't conduct a wake. She had no ability to communicate what had happened. She felt responsible. She couldn't even parent. So the play is really about this mother and her daughter who is very strong, who's trying to connect with her mother and can't decide whether to just be feral, to try to save her mother, to just abandon her the way she's been abandoned. And so it's a very, very intimate story in a certain way, but her imagination is explosive. The child keeps, just like in the Odyssey where Odysseus is trying to get home to his wife, who is perceived as a widow. He can't because he keeps being thrust into these magical circumstances. And he's being punished, and he keeps having all these adventures that keep him from coming home. That's what's happening here. Although this, I think you could call this an inverted Odyssey. It's as much psychological and emotional as it is real. Even though in the story, they really do. Their house drifts out to sea.
Well, Jen, thank you very much. Please take a moment and tell our audience where and when, how can they see this really interesting sounding piece.
So the piece is Thursday, Fridays, and Saturday nights at the Ix Upper Platform. We have a lot of free seats as well as reserved seats, so please come. You have no excuse not to show up and give it a chance. It runs an hour and 15 minutes with no intermission. Because it's outside, check the weather. We also post on Facebook. We have the hotline at the bridge will tell you whether we're having a show. But being out in wild nature and in the city is a big part of this, too, how it affects you physically while you're watching this thing. So it runs through April 16th.
Great, great. Thank you, Jen. Chris, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thanks, you guys. Jen.
All right, 58 minutes past the hour. We're coming to the end of Homegrown. Hey, where's the rant?
There is no rant.
Because what do you mean there's no rant?
Because you have...
What do you mean there is no rant? What do you mean there is no rant? Are you telling me there is no rant? How can I get by if there's no rant? God, I was ready for a freaking rant. Keith, oh, fuck, Keith.
Okay, well, apparently I have robbed Clinton.
Betrayal!
Apparently, I've robbed Clinton of storming out, but not really, because he'll just storm out of the room for anything. All right, but thanks so much to Carmel and Jen for coming to talk to us today. We will see you guys next week. Stay tuned. It's Sean McCord and The Wake Up Call.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.